Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Food Network Obsessed. This is the podcast where we dish on all things food with your favorite chefs, food influencers, and Food Network stars. I'm your host, Jamie Sire, and today we have an entertainment industry veteran on the podcast to talk about his 3 decades in television and his signature comedic voice. He is an Emmy-nominated host, producer, actor, and writer, and the host of Halloween Baking Championship, it's John Henson. John, welcome to the podcast. I am so excited to chat with you today because I was a Tok Soup fan back in the day. So excited to
come on. First of all, you're not nearly old enough.
I am.
Second of all, I assume if you were watching Tok Soup, you were some sort of a latchkey kid, because at whatever age, whatever tender age you would have been watching, somebody should have been supervising you. That show should not have been on the airwaves.
Yes, I was latchkey, but also in high school, I believe, when you were hosting, maybe early college. Very excited to chat. For those who aren't diehard Tok Soup fans, what is the Skunk Boy origin story that still lives on in your social media handles?
Oh, God. So that was, you know, I was an enormous Tok Soup fan before I became the host of it. It was originally hosted by Greg Kinnear. And Greg used to refer to himself as Soup Boy. And I started in January of 1995. And I was born with a birthmark, a little white streak of hair on the right side of my head. I've had it since birth. It is much less defined now that I am an old Lord of the Rings character. But it was very pronounced when I started Tok Soup and just improvised one day, I think in my first week or two on the air, I refer to myself as Skunk Boy, and man, did that stick with a vengeance.
And you gotta keep it going, right?
I ended up naming my production company Skunk Boy Inc. And yeah, it's an era-specific nickname, but occasionally, like, I'll be on the street and just hear from a passing car, Skunk Boy! You know what I mean? It's really bizarre.
I love it. Well, now you are the host of Halloween Baking Championship, the creepiest culinary competition out there. But before you, you hosted and produced shows like Wipeout and, as we just mentioned, Tok Soup on E! Can you kind of walk us through your path through into the entertainment industry?
I went into comedy very early on. I started freshman year of college. I started doing improv, and then sophomore year of college, I discovered stand-up and immediately became obsessed with it. And I actually released myself on my own recognizance from school.
I like that terminology.
I left college after my sophomore year to do stand-up. You know, maybe 7-8 years later, I ended up getting Tok Soup and moved out to LA in 95. And I've been incredibly fortunate in that. I mean, I'm coming up on a few years. It'll be 30 years in television for me. So I've been very, very lucky to get continually trick people into hiring me.
When you think back to those early days, you say you became like kind of obsessed with stand-up. What was it about doing stand-up that really drew you in?
I think it was, you know, stand-up is... performance wise, it's like jumping out of a plane. I mean, you're up there by yourself, and it's gladiator school in terms of comedy. And at the time that I started, stand up was really exploding in the country. It was like, you know, comedy clubs were popping up all over the place. I had always been into comedy. I have four older brothers, and you know, I was the kind of kid who grew up watching Saturday Night Live obsessively and David Letterman. And so when I started, I just really had, I mean, it really genuinely was an obsession. I just felt like I have got to get good at this, and I don't care how long it takes or what it costs me. Like, this is all I want to do. And honestly, I think it kind of requires that, because it takes a long time to really get on your feet as a comic. And you have to be kind of tunnel visioned about it. My first night in New York City, I went to a comedy club, and there was an older comic sitting at the bar. And I said, "You got any advice for somebody just starting out?" And he said, "Yeah, if there's anything else you can do, do that." And I was like, I gave him a very honest answer. I go, "I'm not good at anything else." And he goes, "All right, well, then don't give up your seat at the bar," meaning don't stop, just keep doing it. And I just spent every night in the clubs for years and years and years, and was very lucky to start working all the clubs in New York, and that led me to Talk Soup.
What was that first time being in New York, standing on stage and doing your thing?
My first night in New York City, I went to the Comic Strip on the Upper West Side, and I saw Adam Sandler, I saw David Spade, Chris Rock, and you know, it was it felt like I had found my people. That club ended up becoming my home club in New York. I mean, in New York, comedians will understand this, and I guess it's the same is true of LA, but you develop like a relationship with one club. That is your club, and you can work all the different clubs, but there's one club that you feel like you're home in. And that was the Comic Strip for me. And God, I spent every night there for probably 7 years.
You talked a little bit about your time growing up with four brothers, or the youngest of four brothers. How much did that like kind of influence your need or desire to kind of be the one entertaining everybody?
Well, enormously, because my brothers are 7 to 14 years older than me. Like, I was very clearly an accident. It's like, you know, it's like four kids every year and a half for 2 years, and then one kid 7 years later. Like, it was like okay. And so I could not compete physically. I could not defend myself. Anybody with one or two older brothers knows, I mean, you have four older brothers, and it's like growing up on the yard in Pelican Bay. Like, there's a lot of physical abuse. And and because I was not able to win any matchup, I had to defend myself verbally. And my brothers are all really, really funny. So my sort of baseline for comedy that I was exposed to as a child was a couple of generations older than me. That was my coping mechanism.
Tell me about your time in the Intercorpses.
Oh my God. The Intercorpses. This is deep dive kind of stuff. Did you hire a private investigator?
Yes. Well, I can't reveal my sources.
The Intercorpses was a brief foray into a punk rock band that lasted for I'm going to guess about 10 days. It was it was my high school years, my good buddy Matt Davis, Eric Gladstone, David Greenberg. There was a battle of the bands in our high school, and we decided that we were going to ruin it. And and so we decided to essentially put together this punk rock band performance art piece. And I was there's a great, oh my God, there's a great photo of us in character, shall we say. It was sort of like Spinal Tap before Spinal Tap. But yeah, we did Anarchy in the UK. And I think I remember I got my hands on a breakaway bottle. Like a stage model.
Yeah.
And I was this sort of Sid Vicious lead singer. And at one point I was to break this bottle over the head of Matt Davis, our lead guitarist. And I did not realize this, but we were moving and sort of, you know, moshing with a breakaway bottle, you got to hit the center of the bottle for it to break easily. And I kind of caught him with the bottom of the bottle and it did break, but it was hard enough that it cut his head open.
Oh,
and
no.
So I want to say there was actual blood on his face. I think he destroyed a guitar on stage.
Wow.
It was pretty intense. And there was a guy that we went to school with who was like an incredible drummer and great musician. You know, him and his band went on. He did like a 10-minute drum solo. They ended up winning. But years later, and I mean, this was like 5 years ago, I heard from that guy on Facebook and he was like, dude, what you guys did was so epic. Hitting him with a bottle, smashing a guitar. You totally should have won. It was that's my intercorpses story.
Wow. All right. And I assume you succeeded in ruining the
100%. I mean, I think we got in trouble because we might have messed up the stage breaking the guitar. I mean, it was a wonderful example of my high school career in that I was drawing negative attention.
All right. Well, aside from, you know, obviously that career defining moment, can you kind of reminisce on some of the other moments throughout the last, you know, like you said, almost three decades in the entertainment business that really, you know, are special to you?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I don't know. I try not to take myself or my career too seriously. And I think anybody who knows my career would agree. But, you know, I think that kind of like milestone moments, I think, are defined by other people. There are moments that are very special to me. You know, I think booking Talk Soup, a show that I was an enormous fan of, and moving out to L.A. and actually, you know, hosting a show that I was obsessed with was a really, really thrilling moment. I will say that, like, Talk Soup, it was such a unique time in cable TV. When I started that show, E! Was such a young network that they literally did not have the infrastructure to watch over us. Like, nope, they did not have enough executives to supervise us. So it really genuinely, for people who know the show, was the lunatics running the asylum. I mean, I was there for 4.5 years. I did over 1,100 episodes, and I never once had a note session. Like, nobody,
really?
No one ever sat us down and was like, guys, you got to tuck it in, man. Like, we did whatever. They were just happy that we would hand them a videotape and go, here, you can air this. You know, Talk Soup, when I started, aired 4 times a day. They didn't have programming. So it was a very special time in my career because it was so deliciously self-indulgent. And and I was so naive being so young. I was in like my mid to late 20s. And, you know, I didn't know television and nobody was really teaching me television. So all we were trying to do was make ourselves laugh. And I think that was kind of the charm of the show. The, you know, let's put on a show in the barn. My my mom made costumes, low res, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. We had no money. All we really had was a studio. And so we were just trying to make ourselves laugh. There was a moment my last year on the show where we did a live show in Chicago at the State Theater. That's the theater that Letterman and Leno used when they did live shows. And the line to get in started forming at like, I don't know, 8 or 9 in the morning.
Wow.
And it was January, like, you know what
in
I mean?
In Chicago.
And I walked out on stage at the beginning of the show. We did a big musical number to begin it. And we got a standing ovation. And I just remember looking out at this, you know, people were in costumes. It was nuts. And I just remember thinking, I just don't think it can ever get better than this.
You know? Wow.
It was pretty neat. But I've been very lucky. I've gotten to do so many really, really cool things. But I think the thing I'm most grateful for is that this is like my only hustle. I mean, I left college and I've been, you know, in this business for 35 years and gotten to do what I want, gotten to do more than I ever could have dreamed of. So it all feels very special to me. I really feel.
Yeah, no, that's pretty incredible. How would you say the entertainment industry has kind of evolved since you first started?
Well, there's 300 channels and the internet. And, you know, I always laugh because when I started at Talk Soup, I was obsessed with learning everything, learning how to write for TV, learning how to produce, learning how to host and kind of, you know, ground flooring it up, learning kind of every 360 degree perspective of how to produce television. And then after I spent decades doing that, suddenly it was like, nope, all you need is an iPhone, you know, and there's
so
YouTube
true.
And you can have 1.5 million followers and you can start when you're 15 and, you know, or be an 8-year-old with an unboxing channel
exactly.
And make 4 million a year. And I'm like, oh, great. That's really nice that you guys did that after I dedicated decades to learning a dying medium. Yeah, I think there's so many opportunities to put your own content out now. Mm-hmm. That's the coolest part.
I agree. I always feel so old when, like, you know, up and comer like reporters in the business are like, can we talk, like, advice? And I'm like, I don't even know what to tell you. Like, I was like carrying around my own equipment and tripods and like giant cameras, you know, back in the day.
Yeah.
Like, everybody has it so easy.
Yeah,
now.
it's like a modern digital photographer asking one of those old West photographers that had to get under a cape and hold up one of those fly poof with a big old, you know, puff of smoke to take a photo.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the evolution of the business and the ability to create really anything you want, to not have it be such a linear process where you can go direct to an audience and create your own stuff and bypass the whole kind of studio or network system is creating like exponentially more content.
John tells us all about hosting Halloween Baking Championship when we come back.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/ACAST and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Whether it's, you know, a show or a genre, what is your approach to hosting in general? And what is your responsibility that you feel like you need to bring to the process?
Oh, wow. Interesting question. I think it's just spontaneity, right? Like the most useful tool, I think, as a host is listening. Mm. I've always said the hardest thing to do, I think, honestly, the hardest thing to do in television is be yourself on camera. And obviously the things that I do, when I say myself, it's a heightened sense of myself, right? I mean, it's always a bit of a character, but to be present and to be able, you know, you can tell when somebody's interviewing somebody and they're asking a question, and then instead of listening to the answer, they're thinking of their next question. Mm-hmm. and so being able to listen and kind of, certainly in Halloween Baking Championship, it's kind of matching the energy and the mood and the tone of the situation you're in and whoever you're talking to. That show is obviously very silly and funny, but people work so hard on that show and they get very invested. And as you get later and later into the season, eliminations are very emotional. Mm-hmm. People sometimes cry. And so you have to be present enough to honor whatever is happening in that moment and match that energy. And obviously you want to connect with people. You want to make contestants feel comfortable, feel like they can talk to you, feel like they can open up to you, because that's really what the audience wants to see. They want to see who someone genuinely is.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's why you are so perfect for this show. I mean, do you have like preparation that you do for each episode and what you're going to say, or is it kind of more off the cuff?
I have absolutely no preparation. I have a lot of the sort of benefits of having hosted a lot of television is I don't have to think about the mechanics of hosting as much as I did when I started, you know, where the camera is and how to pace things and transition from scripted copy, setting up a challenge or something, or going over the rules and then transitioning into improv. That kind of stuff you get used to after repetition. I just want to be in the moment. So mm-hmm. I don't have to bring a lot to it. What I need to do is be in the right frame of mind where I'm 100% focused on what's happening in that moment, and just try to be present. There's a lot of improv on that show. There's mm-hmm. a lot of just responding to what's happening, and that's one of my favorite parts of it, is it just kind of allows me to freelance.
Yeah, allows you to do your thing and do the thing that they obviously hired you for, you know. And the theme this year is Hotel Henson. Feels very Bates Motel. What was it like to have your own theme for a whole season?
I gotta tell you, I'm really hoping they turn over the property. I feel like at this point, it's a unique fixer-upper opportunity.
There's
a lot of money to be made in real estate. The last couple of seasons, we've had these big, huge themes, these ecosystems, these world-building ideas behind the entire season. And it gives it gives you a lot of grist for the mill in terms of finding the humor, because it gives you something to plug into a viewpoint or sort of a structure. And so that's been really fun. We did Camp Devil's Food Lake, and then this year it's Hotel Henson. And so I've had a lot of fun the last couple of seasons, just kind of plugging into, all right, this is the world we're working in. What does that give me? So yeah, they do a fantastic job of planning these seasons.
Yeah. What is it like to see the set kind of come together and come to life? Because obviously I'm sure there's so many people working on these things behind the scenes.
Well, that's kind of the fun part of it is what, by the time I show up, all that's done. So I just walk in
and
it's like, bam, you know, they put so much thought into everything that over the course of the entire season, I will be discovering new little nuancey details about the set or things that you don't notice. You'll look and realize something has writing that you didn't notice right away. And oh, wow, they put thought into that. It is kind of like, it's the unveil. It's the move that bus moment of just like walking in and being like, wow, they created a hotel. And so it is, each season is like, I get to discover it new.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, the challenges are equally, you know, unique and creative, and a lot of thought goes into them, clearly. Do you have any insight into how those challenges are developed or what that process is like? Or are you also just showing up and being surprised every time?
And I'm literally learning the challenges as they're coming out of my mouth. Like, I they have a team of really talented, the culinary staff, the producers, the writers, the whole team of executives, they've got it down to a finely oiled machine, and they're really thoughtful about it. And so I'm oftentimes learning it, you know, day of, if not in the moment. I mean, you know, I'll walk out and they'll go, okay, here's the challenge you're setting up. And then 15 seconds later, I'm reading it to the contestants. So yeah, it is oftentimes, put it this way, if I look just as surprised as the contestants, that's not acting.
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, it kind of adds to the charm of it. You know, you are exploring and finding out at the same time as the contestants and, you know, at home as the same time as the viewers as well. Do you notice a difference between contestants who are classically trained versus those that are self-taught?
It's interesting. Yeah. I mean, every season we've got some amount of home bakers, self-taught people. And then, you know, there's sort of pros and cons, right? I think obviously people with more classical training have maybe a broader skill set, but that doesn't always translate to taking that classical skill set and translating it into something super creative for this particular show. So it's interesting. I mean, the home bakers, I think, tend to try to tailor things to their wheelhouse. Everybody has their, you know, their fastball desserts or dishes that they make and they're very comfortable with. But, you know, I think there's pros and cons because classically trained bakers can sometimes think inside the box, and home bakers maybe are more used to thinking outside the box.
Yeah, more likely to maybe take some risks or that kind of thing. Speaking of which, I mean, what's the number one mistake that you see on the show?
Time management. I mean, that's really the hardest thing in any of these competitions is time management, because I love to cook. I always say there's nothing harder than what I call an away game, you know, when you're cooking in somebody else's kitchen and you have to turn around and go, wait, where are the whisks? You know, so for these guys, you know, they're in a space where they're learning the ovens, they're figuring out where everything is, and they're also having to design on the fly. And sometimes it's easy on the show to bite off more than you can chew, than to think that everything is going to go perfectly and you're going to have the time to do X, Y, and Z. And it comes down to, can you stay on schedule so that you're not rushing what ends up being the most visually impactful, which is, of course, decorating.
Mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah. And I think another fun part about the show, speaking of visual, is just the costumes for the judges. And I'm curious, like,
how
you keep a straight face when, you know, Carla Hall, Stephanie Boswell, Zach Young, you know, emerge in these costumes, elaborate costumes for judging a tasting.
It really, I mean, these guys, the whole hair and makeup team, they wardrobe, they deserve an Emmy. What those guys are able to pull off week to week is so incredible. I will say last year, Stephanie did basically a costume inspired by the movie It. She came out in sort of a Pennywise vibe. And that was hard to take. That one got right inside my brain. And I just remember going, no, 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 no. It really is a bit of a reveal. Those guys will spend 3 or 4 hours in hair and makeup, and they're doing prosthetics. They are, they have to go through it. That's a long time to sit in a chair with people messing with your face and your hair. And then, of course, at the end of the day, they got to take it all off. I mean, it never fails to blow me away. So, I mean, there's just so many classic ones. Zach was Bob Ross this year.
Amazing.
You know, Stephanie was Pizza Rat.
I saw that one. That's so good.
Yeah. I mean, Carla and Stephanie did, all three of them. They basically did the triplets version of the twins from The Shining. Watching Zach come out in the little blue dress with Stephanie and Carla is just so fantastic. It's my favorite part of the show is introducing them when they come out for judging in their costumes.
No, it's incredible. Like you said, the hair, makeup, wardrobe department for that show especially is just mind-blowing what they can accomplish. And curious who you sent your therapy bill to Stephanie or to Food Network after the Pennywise costume.
I'm telling you, that was like, all right, well, you know, so much for sleep. I don't think I'm going to be sleeping well tonight. It was fantastic. And they're transformative. I mean, these guys really disappear into these costumes, and to go from something like, you know, Stephanie as Elvira to her as Bigfoot, you know, I mean, it really is incredible to watch.
If you could choose a costume, what would it be?
I would probably go with, that's a good question. I might go as the president of Food Network and just come out and pick the show up for another 15 years. If I could just see if I could pull it off and people go, I don't know, they said it. I guess we're doing that. I guess we just give them lifelong contracts now. It's like a Supreme Court justice job. You just keep it till you die, you know?
I love it. I think that's a good plan. You might want to, you know, pull that one out for next year.
Yeah.
No, this has been so much fun, and we so appreciate you taking the time. We're going to finish things off with some rapid fire questions, and then we have one final question for you here on Food Network Obsessed.
Excellent.
All right. So, favorite Halloween candy?
Ooh, Snickers, king of candy bars. Come on, man. We do not need to reinvent the wheel. And I think it begins and ends there. And if you're one of those people who gives out a full size Snickers, God likes you.
I was just going to ask, full size or fun size, you know?
I have my answer there. Yeah, go full size, man. Yeah.
Oh, man, those houses were the best. Dessert of choice.
Ooh, I'm going to first blush, I'll say butterscotch budino.
Oh, okay. One word to describe your comedic approach.
Unplanned.
As we've learned.
Yeah.
What do you do during downtime on set?
I harass the judges. We are really, honestly, the four of us are so close. We consistently refer to our season as summer camp because we are so close. We stay in touch throughout the year and we hang out whenever we can. So to have a few weeks together to work together, we enjoy each other so much that we work together all day and then we go out to dinner every night.
Oh, I love that.
So, if I am not just laying around lazily in my dressing room. I don't get as much downtime as they do. And I have a problem with that. They get a lot of time backstage. I get like a lot of like, okay, you've got 4.5 minutes, you know? And I would say, creeping into the hair and makeup room to see what kind of horrors they're putting together for later on in the show.
Yeah, hair and makeup room is always the best place to hang out for sure.
It's where it all goes down. It is literally the kitchen of the party. You know how mm-hmm. every party ends up in the kitchen?
Yep.
On set, every party ends up in hair and makeup.
Yes. Also, I used to say that was also my therapy session for the day as well.
Oh, 100%. Every time I get out of Jackie's chair, it's like I'm expecting her to go, okay, let's pick up here on Tuesday. I think we got some good stuff done together and I want to get back into that dream when you return.
I love Jackie. She's the best. All right, last rapid fire. Favorite scary movie?
Ooh, I'm going to go with what I feel like was the most scarring for me. My older brother took me to a revival of The Exorcist when I was like, I want to say 8 or 9.
Oh, yeah. That's too young.
I'm going to just be honest with you. That's the kind of thing the state takes kids away for now. Like, that's Child Protective Services kind of territory. And I was a little kid. And in the classic scene where Reagan's head turns around, someone in the audience started choking on whatever they were eating.
Gosh.
And it was one of those full-on, like, stop the movie, lights come up, Heimlich maneuver kind of thing. And the person ended up being fine, but it was such a moment of, like, I just remember being like, I want to go home now. I just really want to go home. And I do not know if I slept for the rest of the summer.
Probably not.
Movie made an impression on
me. Oh, wow. Okay. All right. Our final question. This is the question we ask everybody at the end of our interviews here on Food Network Obsessed, and that is, what would be on the menu for your perfect food day? So breakfast, lunch, dinner, and dessert. We want to hear what you're eating for all of those things. There's no rules. So no calories count, time travel, as much money as you want to spend.
Okay.
It's your day.
All right. Both of my parents are from the South. Both my parents were born in Arkansas. Mm. So even though I grew up in the Northeast, I feel like I was raised Southern.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go with the kind of, you know, angioplasty breakfast that I grew up with, like the full on like eggs and bacon and sausage and grits and hash browns.
Biscuits.
And buttered toast. Yeah. Biscuits. Yeah. 100% biscuits. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Carla Hall's biscuits, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. Well, she's, and believe me, that woman is very serious about her biscuits. So lunch, I'm going to say pizza in the Piazza in Capri, Italy, right at the top of the funiculare. There's a little pizza restaurant and the view is incredible. You're overlooking the Marina Grande and it is about 100 yards away from a gelato stand.
Oh, perfect.
Where you can smell the homemade cones, you know, mm-hmm. and you just sort of take this cobblestone street, walk down the hill, just following your nose like Scooby-Doo. That would be my lunch.
Oh, I'm putting that on the bookmark that for my next trip to Italy.
Yo, it's just so good. And then dinner. You know what I will say for dinner? I will say my baby is a better chef than any restaurant that I would be able to imagine going to. So I'm going to say making dinner at home.
Okay. And anything in particular or just anything?
That's, the beauty of dating a great chef is that you don't need to ask.
It's
all
true.
You need to know is what time to be there. So, but yeah, no, I love cooking. I love being a part of making a meal. And cooking for somebody is a very nurturing, intimate thing. You know, I think making someone laugh and feeding someone are two of the kindest, most nurturing things you can do for somebody else. So, yeah, making dinner together in the kitchen, laughing, listening to music. That sounds perfect to me.
I could not agree more. That sounds wonderful and exactly what I would like to do as well. So, thank you so much for taking the time. And again, we are looking forward to the rest of the season and especially that finale on Halloween.
Yeah, I am very excited about it. This was a really fun cast. We get very attached to our casts, and they are their own ecosystem on social media. They have a whole kind of thing going on Instagram, and we're still in communication. So a lot of twists and turns this season. I think you guys are going
to
like it.
Looking forward to it.
Thanks so much.
I absolutely love Halloween Baking Championship this time of year, and you can catch all of John's hosting shenanigans on Food Network Mondays at 9, 8 Central, and don't miss the finale on October 31st. Make sure to follow us wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a thing, and if you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review. We love it when you do that. That's all for now. We'll catch you foodies next Friday.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.